This is WPRB Princeton, New Jersey, 103.3 FM, community supported independent radio. Now at 5 p.m., it's WPRB News and Culture. And I'm your host, Natalie Hahn. The new year has begun, and all of our feelings of anticipation have settled in. No matter how we feel now, however, waiting is a universal experience. We wait in lines, we wait for opportunities, we wait for change. It's like standing at the edge of a vast ocean, anticipating the incoming tide. But in that waiting, there's a curious tension, a space ripe with potential and possibility. We're surrounded by moments of anticipation, each one pregnant with its own narrative. As we navigate the landscape of waiting, we ponder its significance. What does it mean to wait? What lessons does it teach us? How does it shape our perceptions of time and progress? Join us today on WPRB News and Culture as we explore the art of waiting, contemplating its nuances and uncovering the hidden treasures within its quiet depths. First up, Helen Hoyer walks into Princeton, New Jersey's town to inquire about the minds of those waiting in lines. She discovers how the simple act of waiting in line speaks deeply to understanding modern anxiety, technology, and the dynamics of patience. Next up, I speak to a Brooklyn-based astrologer about anticipating the future. Can the stars really answer our deepest questions? Perhaps that is not the question we should be asking at all. And in our last story, Adam Sanders visits the Princeton airport to wait for airplanes and considers the joy of the earthbound plane spotter. Stick around, we'll be right back.
WPRB wants you to know about the Philadelphia Reentry Coalition. They are a coalition of reentry service providers, practitioners, and advocates working in the Philly area to support people coming home to Philadelphia from jail or prison. The coalition's goal is to ensure people have autonomy and choice and play a central role in the reentry services and resources that they access. The coalition does this by increasing communication, facilitating collaboration, and building capacity of its member organizations. To get the latest about reentry in Philadelphia, or to find out how you can get involved, please visit PhiladelphiaReentryCoalition.org. That's PhiladelphiaReentryCoalition.org. This has been a public service announcement from WPRB Princeton, community-supported independent radio.
You're listening to WPRB News and Culture. First up, Helen Hoyer walks into Princeton, New Jersey's town to inquire about the minds of those waiting in lines. She discovers how the simple act of waiting in line speaks deeply to understanding modern anxiety, technology, and the dynamics of patience.
So, I guess you're at the back of the line, so maybe you haven't been waiting very long, but how long would you say you've been waiting?
30 seconds.
Do you have like a record for how long you've had to wait in a small world line?
Probably 10 minutes.
10 minutes? What did you do while waiting? Do you remember?
On my phone mostly. Yeah.
On your phone? Doing what? Just
checking emails.
Do you play games ever on your phone?
Not often, but I have. Yeah.
Hello everyone. In case you couldn't tell from the audio just now, I interviewed a lot of people waiting in lines on or near Nassau Street. While I was originally interested in gauging what people deem worth waiting for and for how long, I soon realized that what they did while waiting was far more varied and often alluded to their values regarding their time and their technology. The man I interviewed in Small World described checking emails while waiting for his NOLA, which, from a brief scan of the line, seemed to be a common trend. This multitasking makes sense, since the time standing and waiting would otherwise go to waste, so it seems. Another man at Maman had a similar response.
My name is Rich. I live in town here.
So do you come to Maman a lot?
Yeah, probably once a week-ish.
How long would you say you normally wait here?
Here, it's usually pretty popular because it's kind of newish. So if you come at peak times, like right now, the line's probably like 5 and 7 minutes.
How long would you say you would wait for whatever you're getting here?
Here, I'm willing to wait longer than some of the other places because I like food and stuff. So.
Yeah. What do you do while you're waiting?
If I know what I want, I'm on my phone multitasking.
I wondered whether it was pure efficiency that influenced people's habits to respond to emails or do any other organizational tasks, such as clear out their camera roll or delete spam, or if social forces played a role in the decision as well. At the next place I visited, I interviewed 3 local high schoolers waiting for cupcakes. When asked about what they did to pass the time in line, they had a slightly different response.
So how long were you just waiting in line for your cupcakes?
Probably
3 minutes.
10 minutes.
What, really?
Yeah. Do you come here a lot? Is this like a normal spot for you guys?
Not really. We go to town a lot, but not really specifically here.
Okay. What prompted you to get cupcakes today?
We just wanted a sweet treat.
So in that 10-minute wait, what did you guys do?
We're just talking. Yeah. It's like the best way to pass time, right?
Yeah.
When you're in line alone, what do you do?
I go on my phone and pretend to call someone.
So do you feel like waiting is kind of like awkward?
It depends what you're waiting for.
Yeah.
In what situation would it be awkward, and in what situation would it not be?
Like if I go to the supermarket and my mom gets out of line to get food, but I'm coming near the front of the line, and now I don't have any money and my mom's still bringing me stuff, it's so awkward and I don't know what to do.
That's actually so relatable.
Yeah.
I've been there. This is just a fun question, but what is the longest line you guys have ever waited in?
Disneyland. Oh, I waited for 2 or 3 hours.
Was it worth it?
I don't think anything's worth that.
The awkward feeling at doing nothing, they described, is personally relatable, and I hate to admit it, but oftentimes the phone calls I've made home take place in long lines when there is a kind of comfort that comes from looking occupied. Another girl I interviewed, this time at Olive's, chose to eliminate waiting altogether.
So how long have you been waiting for your sandwich?
Probably 45 seconds.
45 seconds.
Do you come here a lot?
I do.
And how long would you say you normally wait?
Well, I usually order on Snapcast, so no wait at all. There's like an app you can order ahead, some like local restaurants and it's...
Okay, wait, so what exactly is Snapcast?
I usually just like order it, get ready, and then by the time I walk over here, it's all ready.
Never heard of that. That's a great idea.
It completely cuts the wait time.
Yeah.
Technology like this has directly eliminated waiting for food, services, reservations, appointments, etc. Even in amusement parks, where over half the people I interviewed described waiting in the longest lines of their lives, there are new apps that let you buy fast passes and real-time clocks that show how long the wait is at every ride, so that you yourself can determine whether it is worth standing in. Seemingly, technology gives us back a great deal of time we would otherwise be wasting in line. However, the last conversation I had with a couple and their child at Bent Spoon, which is a fast-moving yet constant line out the door, challenged this.
I'm John.
I'm Jess.
We're from down by Philly area, just west of Philly. Okay.
Cool. Visiting for the day? Or?
Yep.
Awesome. Yeah.
But how long have you been waiting?
2 minutes.
Yeah.
Not too bad.
How long would you say you're willing to wait?
For the best ice cream in town?
Yes. Like how long before you just turn in the towel and go to another place?
Because I have children with me, 10 minutes.
Do you ever have to wait like with your kids in a super long line?
Yes, on occasion. We're big readers, so it's not rare for us to all be holding a book.
That's great.
And then missing the line move up.
So when you have to keep them occupied, you're not like giving them an iPad or giving them a phone.
Yeah.
We've talked to a lot of other people who like their go-to when they're waiting in line is to do like a phone game. No judgment. Yeah.
A couple girls were like, I pretend to be on my phone, which I've also done.
You're standing there alone, that's one thing.
Is there something a little bit awkward about waiting alone, like with nothing to do?
Yeah, it almost feels like it's appropriate to look at your phone just so you're not like standing there alone. Like, yeah.
But I don't know, I think there's something nice about just standing and...
Definitely letting your thoughts just go.
So one of my favorite things to think about is how smartphones have eliminated all waiting, like train stations, buses, for ice cream. And that's each time, that's like 4 or 5 minutes of unconscious processing time that you're instead filling with Instagram scrolling. And so actually, if you think about it, over a day, if you constantly keep pulling out your phone, you deprive your brain of at least 30 minutes of unconscious processing time.
Yeah.
Or more.
When you put it like that, it's really...
No wonder we're highly anxious, nervous,
the anxiety,
always comparing,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then somebody else is deciding what you pay attention to.
Oh, yeah. We might be depriving ourselves the next Mozart. Because without boredom, somebody might never walk over to the piano. Think about that.
Yeah.
Think about
crazy.
That. Just learn to be patient. It's okay.
Prior to that conversation, I had rarely considered how boredom, in lines and in my day-to-day life in general, had been beneficial, allowing me to process my day and forcing me to creatively entertain myself, often by interacting with others. Maybe the time we spend on our phones while waiting, either compelled by social norms, demands for work, or a combination of the two, is in fact the real waste, and we would be less anxious and freaked out, as John described, if we viewed the act of standing and thinking and processing as productive work in itself. Maybe we just need to be patient.
WPRB wants you to know that if you're a renter in Philadelphia, you should know your rights. PhillyTenant.org has everything you need to know about your rights and obligations as a tenant in Philadelphia. You can find information about security deposits, leases, evictions, repair, lead testing, housing assistance, and much more. That's PhillyTenant.org. A live help for low-income Philadelphia renters is also available by phone 9 a.m. through 7 p.m. Monday through Friday at 267-443-2500. This has been a public service announcement from WPRB, Princeton, community-supported independent radio.
You're listening to WPRB News and Culture. Next up, I speak to a Brooklyn-based astrologer about anticipating the future. Can the stars really answer our deepest questions? Perhaps that is not the question we should be asking at all. Astrology. It's possibly one of the most controversial pop topics in the contemporary moment, and it's gaining traction like never before. 2021 marked a huge jump in the worth of the astrological services industry to $12 billion worldwide. During quarantine, astrology-related content often filled people's, especially millennials and Gen Zers, social media feeds. Often also marked by discussions surrounding gender politics and religion, discourse around astrology offers an intriguing lens through which one can analyze broader social and cultural dynamics. However, today, I am not interested in understanding the politics or economics behind astrological services, nor am I interested in solving the deep quest to find out whether astrology is or can be at all accurate. Instead, I'm interested in a professional astrologer's take on waiting, and waiting for the future specifically. I was able to get an astrology reading done with Brooklyn, New York-based astrologer Rose, who goes professionally by the name of Balsamic Moon. After our astrology reading, Rose was kind enough to answer some questions I had about waiting for the future. First and foremost, I asked Rose, how exactly is astrology different from fortune telling? She explained,
there are stereotypes about the fortune teller, right? And unfortunately, there are people in real life who live up to that stereotype. And, I think anybody who says, oh, this is going to happen on this date, or I access the Akashic record and I see that this is happening, and, you know, be excited or be warned. I think that that's really not constructive, and it can be quite harmful. And some people are even simply grifters, and they're taking advantage of someone being at a vulnerable moment in life and telling them something either to make them feel good or to make them feel fear. And I absolutely 100% don't subscribe to that at all. Like, and I don't think astrology, unfortunately, I think what pop astrology has done and what astrology has kind of become for some people, it's become like, it's become too fear centric. It's become too like, oh, Mercury retrograde. Oh no, we can't do anything, you know, and astrology, the way I know it and learned it and still experienced it, it's really always about the present moment. That's the thing. It, you know, we can get to know these cycles and it can help us anticipate things, but it's very difficult to understand or put yourself in the future because the way you feel about the future is still rooted in the present moment.
In a way, Rose admits to not knowing what the future will hold. She, like anyone else in the world, doesn't have the power to tell me what's exactly going to happen in 10 days for me or when exactly the world is going to end. But for Rose, that doesn't mean there isn't power in astrology. Turning my question on its head, Rose explained how astrology for her does not aim to fortune tell. Instead, it's a way to understand and anticipate certain possibilities, all with the goal of informing the current moment. After all, that's what we aim for when we look for a fortune told, isn't it? We want a peace, an all-knowing sense in the present, to know that the future will be okay. Perhaps we should evaluate our feelings of anticipating the future to try to unveil what we really might be experiencing, feeling, or thinking about our present moment. Despite this insight, however, it's the undoubtable truth that many people do look to astrology for signs or even predictions about the future. I proceeded to ask Rose about how she might respond to this attitude towards astrology. And I asked specifically how she, as an astrologer, would suggest someone approach waiting for something in particular, whether that be a new relationship, a job promotion, or a college acceptance.
He sees, so the thing about astrology and going into astrology, it's like an onion. You just peel off a layer and it reveals deeper onions. And the more you get into it, you know, if you're really approaching it as a grounded person and you have curiosity, right, the more it helps you develop your spirituality, you know. So when someone has a strong desire, someone is anticipating something, or they just like, they're just so focused on like, I just want to meet the man of my dreams. There's a very strong spiritual lesson in that. And there's a lot of personal growth and spiritual growth that happens from the frustration when you embrace that frustration, when you examine that frustration. And astrology is not the only path to explore that. You know, there are other modalities. There's therapy, certainly.
Once again, Rose concludes that astrology is not about a particular future, but instead about a kind of faith and spiritual understanding in the present. She explains with an example.
I remember reading for someone and I saw in their chart, like, I think you are going to meet someone and it's going to be a relationship that's very key for you. Because of the way everything was showing up, it was like, this is someone who's going to maybe even be a long-term relationship, maybe be a life partner. However, the same transit that I was looking at, it could point to somebody who is in that person's life for a long time, but like a total pain. You know, like it's that relationship shows up strongly, but the positive and negative aspects of it, that's energy that's always shifting. And so the more you take responsibility for how you show up in the world, the less concerned you are with how things are going to change or what's going to happen, right? So the anticipation is just something that I would work with someone to examine further because it could be a blockage. And again, astrology points to the flows of the universe. It points to flows in life. And so when someone is so desiring something, they might actually have an inner block that they're not aware of that's preventing them from even seeing opportunities.
I concluded my session with Rose by asking, how might someone's belief or interest in astrology guide the way they understand the future or inform their way of life? Her response to this question led not only to insight about how astrology can influence one's perspective and lifestyle, but it also led to general life advice for both the astrology believing and the not about anticipating the future.
First and foremost, it introduces the idea of flow. I think flow is a really key concept in astrology, cycles and flow, right? And the reminder that the only certainty in life is uncertainty. The only certainty in life is change. No matter what you're going through, it will change. That's just baked into it. The other way it informs your life is also the idea of destiny. The idea that when we were born, all the energies of the universe are sort of imprinted in us. So that's what our birth chart is. It's like an energetic pattern. And so we as beings influence every moment, everyone around us, they're influenced by us too. And so the idea of destiny for me isn't what astrology is great at, is it's destiny, but it's also free will and destiny. It's the idea that, you know, you have certain things about yourself that you're just, that's just what you're born to do. That's just what you're, how you were born to be. But then you can choose how to express that. You can choose how to use that in this lifetime. Like, circumstances may be tricky and challenging, but even the biggest challenge, you can tap into your natural innate gifts.
During my reading with Rose, she accurately described a lot of my personality. She mentioned seeing an affinity for arts and music in my chart, in addition to saying that I seem ambitious and determined upon first impression, which many of my once acquaintances, now friends, have confirmed. Even for those who don't believe in astrology, Rose provides a powerful message about identity and future. To trust in ourselves, by extension, allows us to trust in our futures. Next time you're waiting and anticipating heavily for something to happen, Rose asks us to take a step back and think about the now, to ground yourself in the present you. You're listening to WPRB News and Culture. In our last story, Adam Sanders visits the Princeton airport to wait for airplanes and considers the joy of the earthbound plane spotter.
We're at the Princeton airport on an overcast day.
That's beautiful. That's
waiting for planes to take off and land.
That's quite nice.
Now, Princeton Airport is not a commercial airport. It's no Newark. It's for enthusiasts, student pilots, hobbyists. I'm here with two friends of mine, Charlie McWeeny and Sully Meyer. Charlie and Sully are both aerophiles, fans of airplanes.
I mean, like, when they're at full throttle like that, I think that is piston noise.
Sully is an aerospace engineering student. Charlie is wearing a vintage Boeing windbreaker. They are prepared to look at a lot of planes, while themselves staying on the ground.
When I see a flight that looks interesting in the sky above me, I do go to FlightAware and see what flight it is.
I've stopped by the Harmon and West Airport in North Adams, Massachusetts, from time to time on a nice day. But you're lucky if you see any action there.
Today for WPRB, I'm here on a mission to understand the aerophile impulse, the glee of the earthbound plane spotter, to get a better look inside the mind of the person who would come here for a day to wait and watch for planes.
I don't know. Oh, they're doing touch and go.
No.
Touch and go. Let's go. What did Michael Chabon say about baseball? It's a great slow contraption to enjoy a summer day. It's kind of feeling about general aviation.
We spent the better part of this gray Sunday afternoon wandering the airfield here at Princeton Airport, examining the planes. Sully's brought with him a guide to airplane identification.
Business jets, private light aircraft, that's what we're
doing. There we go.
Sully, for how long have you owned this book? I'm just curious.
I got it from, I believe, the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum when I was 11 years old, or somewhere around there.
Diamond DA
42, or it could be a DA 40.
227 is what I'm seeing there.
It's right here, a Piper Cherokee. It's, I think, one of my dream planes.
It's just a beautiful, beautiful machine.
Gorgeous.
And this is a great livery on it.
Yeah, the red is so classic.
Looking at all these planes made me think. When you board a jet at the big airports, the experience of the plane itself is sanitized, alienated from you. You never see how it flies, how it escapes the ground. If you board from the jet bridge, you barely even see the plane, the marvel of engineering that allows you to literally fly. Maybe the aerophiles are the only ones who are properly outraged, properly excited. Shouldn't we all want to fly? Shouldn't we all want to be aware of the magic?
But I mean, I think there is also, I think part of the imagination around the airplane is the idea that, like, it is like the individual, right? Whereas like complete sovereignty over the aircraft.
Yeah.
Who responds to crisis, who is solely responsible.
There aren't roads nor rails, like.
Right, there's no cops. If you have air cops approach you, then you've really made a mistake.
I think Sully's right to cast the aerophile impulse as an expression of this desire for freedom. If you like cars or planes, sure, you like the machinery, but you're imagining. You're dreaming about the limitless potential of the vehicle, the power to go anywhere. Still, this may just be a dream.
I think the imagination around aviation is, you know, false or misunderstood. Like, yes, it is individualist. You are responsible for what happens up there. But, like, around you is this entire, like, societal system.
As we watch the few flying lessons going on, it's clear most of what you learn is not the acrobatics or heroics that might fill an aerophile's dreams, but rather the mechanics of aeronautical bureaucracy. This is important stuff. It's what makes flying so safe. But it's not the freedom one imagines.
If you want to preserve that imagination, maybe it's best to be a plane spotter instead of a pilot.
Right. Right.
I actually wonder how many people go through after their first lesson with pursuing a license or pursuing it as a hobby.
Because it's like you kind of perceive aviation as being about, like, the pilot's in the seat, you know, being in charge. But in fact, it's like the pilot's performance is the product of this massive, like, infrastructural system. It's like air traffic control and flight training and FAA regulation.
I feel like so much of it is trying to take the individual out of the picture,
right?
Like, everything is done by checklist.
In an era of safe flight, of regulated flight, of commercialized flight, there is no longer room for a great pilot. Air travel is rote and mechanized, everywhere but here. In the world of the aerophile imagination. So while it might sound counterintuitive, it seems the best place to appreciate the majesty of flight is not in the air, but rather here on the asphalt tarmac at a small airport like this.
Plane spotting, train spotting, birding, like they're all about catching these things that are in motion, right? If you wanted to go birding, you'd never be like, oh, let me go get a plane to go birding. Like when you're trying to catch something in motion, you have to stay in one place.
From this stable point on the ground, the plane spotter is able to capture the freedom of the aeronautical dream, to hear the whir of the engines and feel the grumbling motion of the machine, to imagine the potential of flight. Before we left Princeton Airport that day, Sully asked to read a poem he loved about planes and flying.
High Flight, a poem by John Gillespie McGee. And here we go. Oh, I have slipped the surly bonds of earth and danced the skies on laughter, silvered wings. Sunward I've climbed and joined the tumbling mirth of sun-split clouds and done 100 things. You've not dreamed of, wheeled and soared and swung, high in the sunlit silence, hovering there. I've chased the shouting wind along and flung my eager craft through footless halls of air. Up, up, the long, delirious, burning blue, I've topped the wind-swept heights with easy grace, where never lark or ever eagle flew, and while with silent lifting mind I've trod the high, untrespassed sanctity of space, put out my hand and touch the face of God.
For WPRB News and Culture, I'm Adam Sanders.
And that's our show. I'm your host and the show's producer, Natalie Hahn. Tonight's stories were reported, recorded, and produced by Helen Hoyer, yours truly, Natalie Hahn, and Adam Sanders. The theme music for our show is Take Me Higher by Jazar. All music used is under Creative Commons license. For more information, visit our website at news.wprb.com. Can't get enough of WPRB News and Culture? Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, or online at news.wprb.com. WPRB News and Culture is produced in Princeton, New Jersey by WPRB 103.3 FM, community-supported independent radio. Take care and enjoy your evening.